tonight on the Bob Tuscan Show. Deanna Spingola. Spingola.com is her website. Of course, she's an author, talk radio host, activist. And I'm sure she has several other noteworthy qualities, but she is our guest tonight. And we're going to be talking a little bit about Sandy Hook. She has a book on the topic, and we want to get into the nitty-gritty on this. And this might be a chance for us to lay it all on the record so that if and when we have on Jim Fencer, we've been able to present her side of the issue in a quiet and calm fashion. So without further ado, let's bring on Deanna tonight. Deanna, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
Wow, you sound like you're just next to me.
No.
Hold on, let me look over my shoulder here.
No,
okay,
I'm not there.
No, you're not next to me. You're on the line here.
Yes.
Well, how are you tonight? Everything going all right?
Yes, I'm very well, and you?
I can't complain. I'm just getting over the crud, but can't complain. The family got it too. I'm convinced, Deanna, and this might be a conspiracy theory here, but you might be able to help me out to validify if I can think straight here. It's one of those days. The father or the mother or the child never gets sick at the same time, and I'm convinced that's nature's way of protecting the family structure. So, in other words, I get sick, or my wife gets sick first, and then I get sick, and then my son gets sick. And it's never at one big moment where we all get sick at the same time.
Well, that's so that you can take care of each other. The person
I think
that,
so.
isn't ill can take care of the person that is ill. Or maybe it's just the germination time that it takes for something to develop.
That's what I was also thinking.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, interesting. All right. Well, let's not stray too far away from our topic at hand tonight. You wrote a book about Sandy Hook, and you have a different take than others in the so-called alternative media, whatever that is or isn't these days. And rather than me paraphrasing the bits and pieces I've skimmed, why don't you give me a brief outline and a brief thesis, if you will, on your perspective?
All righty. My book, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences, is an expose on big pharma, big government, and big media. The for-profit medical industry is based on the standard of care, a set of protocols created by the AMA, the pharmaceutical industry, and the insurance industry. Licensed doctors are currently obligated to abide by the standard of care in order to get paid by the government. One of the biggest questions that people should be asking about the events at the Sandy Hook Elementary School is, what is happening to the nation's citizens, beginning at birth, that is causing major health issues, increased violence, road rage, suicide and homicide ideation, domestic abuse, most of which we never hear about in the mainstream media.
A lot of components there to dive deeper into, but some of the components that were omitted were the thoughts and ideas that Sandy Hoax or Sandy Hook was completely fabricated, 100% staged. There were no children at the school at all. Nobody died. You know, some of what many might think are conspiracies or even deeper of a conspiracy. So I guess we can kind of work backwards here for a moment and talk about some of your critiques of the other perspectives. Because in my mind, all of the points you mentioned seem self-evident. You know, there's no doubt that SSRIs and vaccines and all sorts of environmental, you know, hazards in our world today have an effect. There's a cause and effect. And I don't for a second think that even some of the people who have different perspectives on the topic will disagree with you on that. Has anyone said, Deanna, you're full of it, SSRIs don't make people go crazy, or whatever, you know, it may be that you just laid out there?
A lot of people counter what I believe, but I find that a lot of people have already accepted the consensus of what people refer to as the hoaxers. And research takes time. Looking at an event and evaluating it, using the primary source documentation, all takes time. And a lot of the claims made by the participants, whether they are sincere or not, in my opinion, functions as a huge distraction. And the participants in the so-called hoaxer movement repeatedly ask, well, what I think are the wrong questions, which takes the focus off of more appropriate questions. And this may function to benefit big pharma, big government, and the big media by obfuscating critical information and concealing the crime of that evil alliance. And, that's just, I chose a different avenue because, as I said, research takes time, and most of the initial claims were made within the first month or even the first 24 hours after the event. And so we can only presume that those are speculative statements, and I just felt that they did not serve, they did not, I just felt that they were speculation, and I wanted to dig deeper into why, what happened afterwards, how the government exploited this event, which they have, and the commissions that were developed, the results, what happened as a result of the events at Sandy Hook on December 14th, 2012.
I've often said that regardless if it was completely manufactured and a complete hoax, that the powers that shouldn't be will still utilize it in the same fashion to push their agenda. For instance, there is a major special interest movement in big government to come after the guns. You know, that was a big part of the story here, of the narrative. And regardless if they were to stage it, if something like this was to happen organically, or obviously not so organically when you're talking about SSRIs and other contributing factors, but if something was to happen like this, where it wasn't a complete hoax, if you will, they would still manipulate it and exploit it in the same fashion. So I think we can all agree on that premise. Do you not think so?
The confiscation of guns, actually, when something like this happens, people are more apt to go out and purchase guns. And if
okay.
they were and I do have a chapter in my book titled talking about gun confiscation, which I felt was also a distraction to take the focus off of the event. And I believe that there were other people who functioned as victims in order to take the focus off of the real victims, But I purchased a gun in April of 2013. And, I purchased it in January. And when I went back to buy bullets.
What kind of gun you get?
A Ruger.
Ooh, nice.
It's just a little revolver. I think an automatic is better. For a variety of reasons. But anyway, that is what I purchased out. That is what I felt comfortable with. That is the gun that I used to take an NRA class. But when I went back to purchase bullets in order to take this class that I took, the shop that I purchased the gun at was literally bare. All of the guns that I saw there in January were gone. When I went to purchase the gun, you had to take a number, you had to stand in line, and wait till your number was called. And literally, when I went back a few months later, I got there about half hour, 45 minutes before the store opened, and I was the second person in line, and by the time the store opened, there were probably 75 to 80 people behind me, all waiting for the store to open so they could run in and run up the stairs to buy ammunition. So, if the government were going to point to an event or point to a reason or justification for confiscating guns, all they would have to do is look at all of the shootings in the Chicago area on any given weekend. And there's sufficient reason to justify the confiscation of guns. But I don't think that was... yes, certainly that was one of the justifications that people used. Oh, yes, the government is doing this or did this. It was a PSYOP in order to confiscate guns.
Well, I think that it doesn't need to be a PSYOP for it to be exploited, though, is my point. And it was exploited on some levels.
Sure.
I mean, we had the media make an obvious campaign. I had on... from Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, mm-hmm. and him on the show the other day. And he went on, what was that joker's name? Pierce Morgan.
Right.
And it was a huge deal, and they were doing all sorts of, anti-gun rhetoric. But you're right. There's something that they've now coined in, I don't know if you've known this, but the famous Jewish singer Barbara Streisand.
Mm-hmm.
They've named an effect after her. They call it the Streisand effect. And basically what happened was she tried to hide the photos of her lavish mansion. And what that did is it made it even more appealing. And everybody tried to find the photos. And next thing you know, more people saw her photos than ever before because of her act of trying to conceal it.
Of course.
And that definitely was the case. I do know for a fact, as you mentioned, the gun sales went through the roof. But right. that didn't stop them from trying to exploit it.
Well, as we all know, Rahm Emanuel famously said...
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yes,
right?
You never want to let a good crisis go to waste. Now, Alex Jones also went on Pierce Morgan and with... I don't remember the date. I do mention it in my book, but so that was, I believe, an attempt to say, see, they're trying to seize our guns. When in fact, I don't believe that was the reason. They've exploited it for a number of causes. The media has always been anti-gun. The government is anti-gun. And certainly they are going to use any incident, or at least this incident, and kind of forget about all of the other incidents that happened, like I say, in the Chicago area. I mean, right in right in Obama's backyard. If he were going to really make an issue of gun violence, all he has to do is look at his own backyard, his own.
Sure. How many years has it been now since Sandy Hook? 2 years almost?
It has been 2 years and about six months.
Okay, so 2 years. Deanna, why are we talking about Sandy Hook?
Because I wrote a book about it, and because you asked me to be on the program, and because people are still talking about it, because there are consequences.
Right.
There are causes, and those causes are still in existence, and the consequences of that particular event have been huge, and nobody's talking about them. And the reason that nobody's talking about them is because they are focused on opposing some of the claims. But a lot of things occurred based on the advisory commission, based on the laws that were enacted, even before Sandy Hook. It was always the government's objective and the psychiatric industry's objective to get as many people on psych drugs as possible. And so even before Sandy Hook occurred, there were algorithms or protocols that were put in place in all places in the state of Texas by George W. Bush during the time that he was the governor there, that he worked with about 10 pharmaceutical companies to place as many people as possible on psych drugs in the state of Texas. And of course they also used them not only in Texas but in other states on prison inmates and in the Child Protective Services. Just about anyone that goes into the Child Protective Services are placed on psych drugs because the government pays for them, and because, well, they are a very, very vulnerable group. And you also have to consider all of the people that are in nursing homes. The people who are on Medicare are typically placed on psychiatric drugs because, again, they are under Medicare, and it makes it a lot easier to control that particular group of people. They also decrease their water intake, their liquid intake, and it makes them more manageable. And I must say that when you put a large population on psych drugs, it would make a big population very manageable. The other group of people that are taking psych drugs that you would not ever, that previously, if a recruit, a military recruit, was on a psychiatric drug, they would not be accepted into the military.
Now it's extremely prevalent. We got to take a break. We'll be back with Deanna Spingola in just a second.
Their names can be added those of hundreds and thousands of others who stood in the way of the new order.
Right now,
isn't what we're building for.
Welcome back to the Bob Tuscan Show. I'm talking with Deanna Spingola tonight on the Unprogram, Deprogram, whatever you want to call it. Deanna, we haven't mentioned the Jews in the last 20 minutes. I think we're going to get in trouble here. We probably should draw some sort of Jewish connection to Sandy Hook. What do you think?
Well, let me finish the thought that I was going to mention before we went.
Please do. Don't allow me to divert us from being on track. I'm sorry. I was poking fun, of course. But yeah, I'm very interested. And the question was, why are we talking about Sandy Hook? What are the big picture implications of this event?
Right. And I brought up another target group that the military, if you were somebody that that went into a recruiter's office and you'd had psychological problems and had been on psychological drugs, that previously you would have been rejected as a recruit. But at least 8,000 military personnel a year commit suicide. Even those who have not been deployed now commit suicide because they are on psych drugs, SSRIs, and some of them are on not just one, but a cocktail of psych drugs. And it is because, of course, that the government pays for those drugs, just as they pay for the drugs for the children who are in protected under the protective custody of the state, or the prisoners, or the people in the nursing homes. And you have to think, well, gosh, the government, it must be one of the biggest customers, one of the biggest buyers for the entire psych industry, the pharmaceutical industry, as far as those drugs are concerned. And that is the case. But think about it now, under Obamacare, that there is even more, there will be mandatory, and I talked about the standard of care, which is that a doctor, a licensed doctor, is obligated, in order to retain his or her license, to abide by the standard of care. In other words, when a patient goes in to the doctor and the doctor, you know, asks a few questions, and they ask very pointed questions. You could be suffering from anything at all, and the doctor really needs to write a script for you. Most patients feel that they have not completed they're so used to walking out with a prescription. And doctors will spend about 10 minutes of their time, and they will look up the algorithm or the diagnosis, and they will prescribe a drug. And more primary care physicians are subscribing psych drugs. And in order for a doctor under Obamacare to get paid, now that the government is in the equation, to get paid, they're more inclined to order a psych drug for anybody that falls within a category that they can do that with. So, And
that's a pretty broad category too. I mean, exactly. You can go in complaining of a hangnail, and you'll come out on an SSRI for crying out loud.
Exactly, and with the digitization of records, which was also started under George W. Bush at his suggestion, and then it's moved forward with the digitization of records, pharmaceutical company will actually be aware of what the doctor has prescribed. And if they're not prescribing enough of those drugs, they will get a slap on the wrist.
More with Deanna Spingola when we come back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hawaiian shirt and chase it down out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase the devil out of earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space.
Talking with Deanna Spingola, it's May, what is it, the month? Is it May? Yeah, May 27th, 2015. And I just heard today, Deanna, that they're going through the motions with, what's his name, James Holmes, the guy from the Aurora shooting.
Right, right.
And he's pled insanity or whatever, and you know, I'm listening to the media propaganda on that. And I see several parallels with the two stories here.
Right. There are parallels in most of the stories. But if you look at history, and I've always contended that history is prologue, that most of the wars, whether you're talking about the first, the two wars in China early on, if you look at Vietnam, if you look at Iraq and Afghanistan, illegal drugs have always been trafficked in those wars, and they've always been a part of warfare. And you're not going to get a big population, a majority of the population, to accept illegal drugs. But if you can get them on a drug that is supposed to be of benefit, if you can create diagnoses, if you can make characteristics, human characteristics, into diseases or some sort of a malady, some sort of a situation that you can drug for or that you can prescribe something for, then you're going to get an awful lot of people on drugs who never would have considered illegal drugs. But if their physician, who they trust and who is an authority figure, says, oh, let me give you something for your anxiety, or let me give you something for your depression. What they've done is that they have medicalized many of the human characteristics. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, depression runs in my family. Well, probably happiness runs in her family or his family, and shyness runs in the family, or you know, there's a lot of things that run.
Because your family's boring, you know. That's why you're depressed.
Yes, they are called human characteristics, and if you
medicalize
them,
and we pass them on, we get them from our environment, and we share those things.
Yes. So you people who would never dream of going to the corner and buying an illegal drug from some stranger are perfectly open to taking a drug that is even more dangerous.
Wow, it's insane.
From their doctor.
Well, and it's the appeal to authority. It's if it's coming from the doctor, then it must be good for me.
Of course.
So, well, we know that's a farce. Deanna, one of the connections with the James Holmes deal and the Sandy Hook that I've heard espoused from many different sources is the connection with the LIBOR scandal. And their fathers who are, and forgive me because I loosely am remembering this, but there was some connection with the LIBOR scandal and these fathers being very influential bankers and so on and so forth, or something along those lines. You know anything about that?
No. That was not a... I didn't focus on anything that is speculative.
So did you determine that it was speculative?
Speculation, Research and speculation are two entirely different things.
Were you able to determine that it was speculative, though?
I didn't look at it, to tell you the truth, because okay. I was very focused on... I'm very focused. I try not to get distracted by a coincidence or by something that may or may not be connected. The commonality that I see is that both people were on psych drugs, and if you look at Columbine,
that's exactly where I was going next. Yep.
Yes, a lot of commonality with Columbine, and people said, "Well, look at all the pictures that were released from after Columbine." Well, those photos were not released officially. Those photos were released by one of the many people who were involved in the investigation. They were not released officially. They were just kind of snuck out. I think what they wanted to avoid here is that they didn't want little 6 and 7 year olds to have their pictures all over the internet. And the other thing too, if you look at Columbine, you'll see that they did practice the same protocol. In other words, they staged the ambulances, and the staging area was about a block and a half away. And you will also find that various NGOs, non-government organizations, such as the Red Cross and other organizations, respond by bringing in food and that kind of thing. And so you have to look at the commonality between this mass event, a mass casualty event, and other mass casualty events, and you will find that they're very similar. The other thing, of course, is that there's been this question about, oh, well, what about the security cameras and whatnot? Well, the last time that the security cameras, or the last time that any security protocols were initiated at the Sandy Hook Elementary School was in 2006. And so there were no security cameras at Sandy Hook Elementary School. They were based on one of the employees in the office having to go to a monitor to answer a call. So, you know, if you look at the commonality, if you look at other mass casualty incidences, you will find that they used the exact same protocols at Sandy Hook. There was nothing, no anomalies here. So anyway, I chose to look at the evidence, the consequences, and the causes. And in order to do that, one must look at the shooter himself. And that is what I did.
Yeah, let's do that for a moment. Adam Lanza, a 120-pound-year-old young man with Asperger's syndrome, and he killed 26 people that day, all himself, driving to the school with a Bushmaster, a Glock. In other words, he was heavily armed, carrying massive weaponry on his person, shot his way into the school and killed all these people in record time, some might argue. A lot of people think that's doubtful.
Well, that is because that was one of the first claims that was made. First of all, an 8-year-old kid, a 6-year-old kid, can shoot the same gun that he used, the Bushmaster. And you can also, he was very, very well skilled. He'd played a lot of video games, and those video games are produced by the Pentagon in conjunction with the so-called entertainment industry, and they are produced in order to create better soldiers. People who have, if you look at the kill rate between, for instance, World War II and the Vietnam War, or the Vietnam War, as opposed to the Iraq War, that the kill rate is much higher because of the skill level of the shooters, because so many of them have been raised playing these video games where you just shoot to get as many targets as you can. And when you look at these children were grouped together, huddled together. It was not like the shooter had to work real hard. They were grouped together, and he'd been shooting a gun since he was four. And there's records of him attending local places where you can practice. He was.
Do you know for a fact that he played video games?
Yes. Yes.
What evidence do we have of that?
There's a lot of evidence. In fact, one of the biggest pieces of evidence. Well, in his basement, he had set up a shooting range, and he had paper targets there. He had video games in his downstairs range. And, yes, he did play video games.
Where did they report that he had video games in his...
Okay. If you look at the Sandy Hook Lighthouse, and okay. there's a timeline, sandyhooklighthouse.wordpress.com. He has a timeline.
Who's he? Adam Lanza?
Reed Coleman. Reed Coleman
okay.
has set
That's
up
his site.
sandyhooklighthouse.wordpress.com. There's
okay,
a timeline.
It.
Okay. Now, he was very skilled at playing the games, the video games. He interacted with others online. There's a huge online presence where he actually interacts with people who were associated with Columbine.
And again, what is our source for this? Because again, I don't doubt it for a second. But since we're fact checking here, you know.
Okay. The source is also the official records, the primary records that were created at the time of the investigation, which are primary source. They were created by dozens of people, and if you're going to oppose the official story, then it would be prudent to wait until the official story is released, until those records are released, instead of making speculative statements within the first week or two after the event. Because anything that is speculative is hearsay. Anything that a person would get from a YouTube video, or even from a compiled source such as a newspaper, is hearsay. In other words, when people are doing research, no matter what kind of research you're doing, if they are using hearsay evidence or compiled evidence, which would be a YouTube video or something, that is nothing more than rumor or hearsay. So, what you want to do, if you want to know what is in, say, for instance, in a vaccine, you're not going to necessarily take your doctor's word for it, because most doctors don't really know what's in a vaccine. You're going to go to the official record, and you're going to look in the official record to find out what is in a vaccine. So people... particularly those who make false claims or those who make speculative statements, they depend on you not looking at the official record. And in fact, they take some official records out of context, or they say, oh, it's just a, you know, a data dump or whatever. If you want to look at what the government's doing, you look at their official records. But the government recognizes that most people are not going to do that. And in fact, they depend on you not doing that. So a lot of people will go with, well, gosh, what's popular? What's most of the people thinking? What is the consensus opinion here? And they will, being part of the herd, which we've all learned to be at, in the government schools, we learn to think with the herd. And so if there's a growing number of people who believe a consensus, and remember that it is easier to indoctrinate a group of people than it is to indoctrinate an individual. It's easier to get a crowd of people to believe in something that is not true than it is to get an individual to believe something.
Emily Parker's dad was laughing and smiling right before he gave an official interview on CNN. Instantly, people came out and speculated that he was not acting in a way a grieving parent would act. I instantly came out and said that, no. We can't sit here and pretend like we know how somebody can grieve. We don't know the full context. When we come back, Deanna, from our last break of the night, I'll let you tackle that and any last-minute issues you would like to tackle, presenting your perspective on Sandy Hook. Deanna Spingola, our special guest tonight, she's written a book on the topic, Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences. Our website, Spingola.com. We'll continue to wrap things up in the final segment in just moments. And, I think this has been good. We're just scratching the surface, of course, but we'll leave the listeners wanting to learn more and read your book. All right, don't go anywhere, Daniel. We'll finish things up in just a second.
Through their ministries of propaganda, each took complete control of the theater, the movies, the radio, every cultural activity and every channel of information.
Well, times is tough, all right.
I'll say.
It's the future.
Killer Atalanta and James Holmes from the Aurora Show, father, both reportedly expected to testify in the LIBOR bank scandal trial that took place in June. Peter Lanza, the Newtown, Connecticut father, is the vice president and tax director at GE Financial, while Robert Holmes, father to the Aurora, Colorado theater shooter James Holmes, is the head scientist of FICO. So that's what I was thinking about earlier. I think it's interesting. I don't know that necessarily.
Well,
makes
I think
the connection.
It's interesting, but I don't think it impacts the shooting.
Sure. So one of the things that we often hear is the testimony or the press conference, rather, of this little girl. What's her name? Emily Parker.
Okay, her father. Okay. All right, on December
15th... he's laughing, right? Go ahead.
Okay, on December 15th of 2012, within 24 hours, CNN filmed Robbie Parker in an 18-minute press conference just outside the doors of the church that his family attended in Newtown, where he had just met with fellow church members. On January 16th, a website published a portion of the video. On December 17th, a YouTuber user uploaded just 27 seconds of the CNN video. The next day, Alex Jones' InfoWars website published the very brief video excerpt. This immediacy suggests high-level damage control. Some entity instantaneously felt threatened, perhaps for very good reason. Now, CNN is headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, as is the CDC. And I don't know whether that's important or not, but it seems apparent that the person who extracted just 27 seconds from an 18-minute video had an agenda. Some people claim that Parker, seen laughing, then allegedly hyperventilating, was an actor attempting to get into character. I view him as an emotionally charged individual preparing to talk about an incredibly painful situation. The 27 seconds do not represent the grief he expressed or the tears he shed during the press conference. Now, I do not recall anyone accusing Russell Yates of acting inappropriately when he smiled intermittently while giving a press conference on his front lawn just hours after his wife, Andrea Yates, drowned the couple's 5 children in the bathtub. Now, why would they just use the 27 seconds? Why not use something that really, really did represent how he felt? Obviously, they had an agenda. CNN had an agenda.
Yeah, they were cherry picking, of course.
Yes.
Right.
You have to ask.
All right, Benny. Let's do this another time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.